truth be told, or your bullshit getting old. The world is getting cold. Don't nobody owe you nothing, so quit fronting. Nothing wrong with being honest. It's a lot of broken promises. Truth be told, we could communicate without all the gun violence. All it took was one conversation. It'll prevent a whole lot of altercation.
Welcome to another episode of Truth Be Told. I am your host, James C. Turner Jr., and today I have a UFC legend, Leo the Lion Coombs. Hey, Leo, thanks for being here. How are you, brother?
Hey, I'm doing fine, James. How are you? Glad to be here, man.
Pretty good, man. Excited to have you. A lot of people are excited.
Awesome. Glad to be here. Glad to be here, bro.
Cool. Let's get right into it, shall we?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. First off, for those of us who don't know, how did you get your nickname, and what exactly does it mean?
Well, to be honest, the town I grew up in had a mascot called the Lions, or the Lion. And then, my name is Leo, which is also the Lion. And, I really didn't have a moniker when I first started fighting. And one of the announcers at one of the local fights that I was showing up for, one of the local venues that I was fighting at, knew me because I was a pretty accomplished high school athlete, football wrestler, and things like that. So he actually knew me from wrestling and football, and he just announced me as a Lion, and it just stuck. It just stuck. So, and I've been the Lion ever since.
Hey, and you got the heart of a Lion too, you know.
Hey, I appreciate that. Thanks, James.
Anytime. So, how did you get into the sport, and what kind of hardships did you face in the beginning, if any?
Well, you know, when I first got into the sport, it was kind of just playing around. Actually, I had just gotten injured. I was coming off an injury on a college wrestling team. I wrestled for Minnesota State University of Moorhead. They were ranked in the top, I believe, top 10 or 15 at that time in the nation as a Division II wrestling college. And I walked onto the team. I had scholarships a year before. I took a year off from college, and then I came back and I walked onto the team, and I'd gone through all the hard practices. I wasn't a starter, basically you get through these hard practices and they put you on the team, and we were getting ready for our first open, and I tore almost every ligament, basically blew out my elbow. They thought I was going to have Tommy John surgery, and I just narrowly avoided having to have it. Any surgery at all, and my elbow actually made a full rehab. But I was coming into the wrestling room while I was hurt, just to watch the practices, and I started seeing these MMA guys messing around after the wrestling practice, because their coach, the MMA coach, had a good relationship with the wrestling coach there, and had brokered a deal where they were able to use the wrestling room as an MMA training space. And I just started hanging out with those guys, and as soon as I was healthy, I started getting in there and training, and next thing I know, I was fighting. And it's been a long road from there, but I mean, that's how I got into the sport, actually. And that was, oh boy, let me think, 12 or 13 years ago was the first MMA training that I had ever done.
Wow. So were there any particular guys that kind of like took a liking to you, or vice versa, that helped you out at the beginning?
Yeah, of course, my trainer, and it was more like a club that we were part of at that time. It wasn't really, it wasn't like a complete full gym. You know, there was one trainer who didn't always show up all the time because he had other things going on, but there was always guys in there. And it, like I said, it was more of a club. We were kind of teaching ourselves and this and that. And now the Fargo-Moorhead area actually has, several legitimate full service gyms there, but at that time they're just, you know, it was still, MMA was still fairly new on the local scenes. You know, 10 years ago it was, you know, it's not like the sport is now, where almost every major city's got multiple MMA gyms and things like that. It wasn't like that when I first got in the sport, for sure.
Now, what is one of your favorite techniques or strikes to use on an opponent, and do you prefer to stand, or do you like to take your opponent to the ground?
Well, I mean, you know, it all just depends. It's not, I've kind of transitioned, you know, in my fighting career to you know, where I don't really like to have much of a game plan anymore. I more like to just basically base what I'm going to be doing off of what my opponent's doing at the time, you know? So yeah, I have some, try to prepare, of course, be ready for the tendencies that your opponent's going to have. But with some of this game planning, especially when it comes into fighting, guys are so crafty. And even if they, you know, the guys at these top levels, they're not doing the same techniques over and over and over again like it used to be, like Chuck Liddell's overhand right, you know, or Hoist Gracie's submissions, you know, where you only had to worry about one thing from these guys. Now these high level fighters can do everything, and they can catch you from any angle with different moves, with different stuff, you know. So that's how you have to be if you want to be a well-rounded fighter and compete at the highest levels. And so that's, you know, as far as a favorite move and things like that go, I mean, whatever wins me the fight, that's my favorite move, you know. Whatever puts my opponent's ass on the canvas, that's my favorite move.
That's what I like to hear. So who's one of, you know, your biggest influences, and what does it mean for you personally to be a fighter?
As far as influences go, probably, you know, the biggest influence in my fighting career that's, you know, probably changed my game the most would have to be my late Sifu, which would be a Kung Fu instructor, Kung Fu master. Sifu is a traditional name for him that basically translates into Kung Fu father. And he would probably be the most influential guy that has come into my life as far as not just fighting technique, but just overall, to where my, you know, I'm a traditional martial artist, and I will be for the rest of my life. And a huge part of that is due to him. So as far as a pure in the cage sense goes, I mean, American Top Team for sure. As far as just pure in the cage types of things like that, who made the biggest influence on my career, American Top Team. You know, once I came here, I mean, I didn't have a great track record out of the gym. I was cutting too much weight, going to 155, not a good weight class for me. I made it barely. I fought there four times. I've never made a championship weight. I've only made 156. That's the lowest I've ever officially weighed in. 156 is the 156 is the lowest that I've ever officially weighed in at. And it was not a healthy weight for me. And then when I fought in Korea, we were doing the weight cuts were actually a little bit lower because it was kilograms. And those I missed both times I fought in Korea, I missed weight.
And then for you, what does it mean to be a fighter?
You know, that's a good question, because I mean, I don't think, you know, for me, it doesn't mean getting in the cage and beating people up, I guess. It's more of, you know, I wouldn't like to, I mean, I am a fighter, but that's not what defines me, you know what I mean? That's not who I am. That's it's just something I like to do, and something that I'm good at, you know. So really, it's just a small part of my personality, small part of my being is a fighter, you know. And that's how I like it to be for me. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be defined as a fighter, as you know, what's this guy do? All he does is fight, you know. What's great, some guys, that's what they want, that's what they're about, that's great, good for them, go after it. For me, that's just not what I'm looking for out of the sport, and what I'm looking for out of martial arts isn't to just be known as a fighter. But being a fighter, it means a lot of things. It should mean respect, you know, for you, for yourself, for your opponent, things like that. Unfortunately, the landscape of the game has changed now to where it's become a circus and a clown show for the most part, to where you have to act out and act the fool and be stupid. For one instance, my success in Twitter and my success now in just in the MMA arena, not even inside the cage, is due large in part to, you know, a branding and marketing tactic that I've employed that's not really at all who I am, but it's, I can't deny the results. I'm getting 3-4. At one time, I was averaging 500-600 followers a day, and I'm still getting pretty close to that now. But it's to the point now to where I've made enough fuss, to where I made enough mess, to where I can think I can actually start branding myself and marketing myself as what I really truly am, and that's a traditional martial artist. But unfortunately, the scene has gotten to a point where, you know, you have to act stupid and be stupid and talk shit. And that's just, you know, that's I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. I think some of these other promotions have a much better model, like ONE FC, for instance. I think they have a much better model for what they're doing with their guys, as opposed to Bellator and the UFC in particular, which both of them are turning into clown shows, circuses, you know. And you know, I can't say so much about Bellator about not paying the guys as much, because their revenue streams aren't as high. I mean, and they're paying their guys well as well. So as much as I like to pick on them and give Scott Coker shit for not signing me and all this other type of stuff, you know, because they got a lot of bums on the roster. They got a lot of good guys too, but half of their fucking roster is bums, you know, and they're fucking bums to feed to the other guys. Hey, man, I'm a legitimate guy. Get me in there. You know what I mean? But, you know, like I said, that's another story, another conversation. So.
Now, do you feel like you're an aggressive fighter, and have you ever broken an opponent's jaw before?
I've never broken an opponent's jaw, but I have broken orbital. I've broken an opponent's orbital before. And most of my fights, I have not been that aggressive. I'm actually most of a timid fighter and a grinder's style fighter, where I'm just tough as nails and I don't quit. I won't give up. You know, you're going to have to put my dick in the dirt if you want me to lose that fight, you know. Or sometimes when I was going down to 155, I was putting my own dick in the dirt by, you know, making these drastic weight cuts. And I mean, you know, I don't like to pick on Islam Makhachev too much, but you know, this is an example of a guy that I fought who later on popped for PEDs, you know what I mean? And it's like, hey, it you're not on the same playing field when guys are taking performance enhancing drugs, especially when you're cutting massive amounts of weight. It's just, you're not on the same playing field with those guys. And, it's just one of those things.
That, and, you know, cutting extreme amounts of weight, that's got to emaciate your body, right?
Yeah. It's totally not healthy for anything at all. I mean, it's your total homeostasis of your body. I mean, as far as your endocrine system goes, it's one of the worst things that you can do for your body is, you know, drastic changes in body weight and body composition, you know, cause, fat and muscle cells and your body composition, you know, really determines, you know, lots of different stuff in your body, you know, not just your endocrine system, your hormonal system, but lots of other things in your body can get, you know, the whole homeostasis of your body and how it's supposed to work when you're making these, you know, losing. When I cut weight down to 155, I mean, I started the camps at just over 190 at usually 8 to 9 weeks and just over 190 as soft. And then I'm making 155 in 8 to 9 weeks. And then a week at 3-4 days after my fight, I'm back up to 190 again, you know, and not big and or not healthy and strong, but I explode. I just balloon up, you know. I go out and I eat all this trash that I wasn't able to eat because I had to be on such a strict diet to be able to make the weight, running 5 miles a day when I was in the UFC to make weight, you know what I mean? And doing all my other training yet on top of that. So it's just, it wasn't good. It wasn't healthy. None of it.
Now, you've had a lot of wins and very few losses. So when you've had a loss, how do you cope and what do you do to prepare for the next fight?
I mean, I think that's a big thing, especially for a lot of the up and coming guys that start off on these hot win streaks and they don't lose fights. You know, I was fortunate enough to lose my first fight. I was 4-0 when I lost my first fight. So I consider that fortunate because it put me in a spot where I knew what I needed to do. I knew why I lost. You know, it was training reasons. It was, I was 4-0 and I was already getting overconfident thinking that the guy I lost to he had some legitimate, Brazilian jiu-jitsu skills. But aside from that, he wasn't a really great fighter and it was just his night, but it was one of the great things for me to where I was able to use it as a wake up call. Look at what I was doing wrong with my training, my camps, which wasn't much, but it was more of a mental thing. You know, it's really more of a mental thing, just getting complacent, starting to think, oh yeah, I'm at the top of the local scene. Nobody's going to be able to, you know, get to where I'm at. No one's going to be able to touch me at the local scene. And, you know, thinking like that, gets you caught. And I'm glad it happened when I was, you know, at that level or at that point in my career, because I was able to use that to put together another really big win streak after that. What did I think? I was 4-1. So I went on 13, I had 13 wins before I had another loss, you know? So, and then my next loss was in the UFC. I did have a no contest, a draw. Or not a no contest, it was a draw. I did end up having one draw, but I mean, it's not a loss. So, you know, I went 13 fights without a loss after my first loss. And then, you know, my track record of my last four fights hasn't been that great. 1-4, but it's all been at 155. At welterweight, I'm 17-1-1 as a welterweight. So.
Now, have you had any opponents try to fight you dirty? And what do you do in a situation like that?
I mean, I haven't had an opponent that I thought actually did anything dirty. I mean, if I had to say, you know, I wrestled for a long time, not in college, but in high school. And even in high school wrestling, I'd say I'd had more guys try dirty shit in a wrestling match than in a fight, personally, you know. So I haven't really been in a fight where, you know, I've noticed that, you know, somebody was intentionally trying to do something. I mean, I can tell you I have for sure. Not exactly just to be dirty, but because you get in a point in a fight. You know, there's this one time I was almost choked out against a very game opponent, and you know he had a good rear naked choke on me. I just reached up and grabbed his gloves and his fingers and ripped the fucking choke off. You know, it's like he probably would have finished me if I wouldn't have did that. The ref just gave me a warning. I mean, you know, it's like just one of those things. So it's not like I was sticking my finger in his eye or something like that, which actually did happen several times in that same fight, but unintentionally from blocking with an open hand, you know, and blocking with an open hand at the face and unintentionally poking the guy in the eye, which happened actually three or four times in that fight, just because of the way the fight went. But
now from a fighter's perspective, what do you think needs to be changed in the sport and why?
Well, I don't know if we have enough time for that conversation, James. That's a big, big, long, long conversation. But for starters, the very first most important thing is a unified rules and ranking system, at least for the top promotions. You know, it doesn't need to be something that every single promotion, a local promotions and things like that need to be part of, because, you know, at certain levels, the ranking systems there matter much less, you know. But when you start getting into these bigger promotions, you know, I think what I think would be something great is to see a unified rules and ranking system that's adopted, not really by the fighters, because one of the things with the fighters is they're strange individuals, in a sense, you know what I mean? As much as we at the gym have loyalty to each other and things like that, on the greater scheme of things, there's not much loyalty amongst the fighters as far as like, let's get together and do what's best for each other, you know, otherwise there'd already be a fighters union. And I think that's one of the reasons why a fighters union hasn't actually come about yet. And I personally don't really think that a fighters union is the answer anymore. I used to at one time think that, because I did used to think it was possible to get these all fighters together and get them on the same page, because, you know, really, if they could, we would make a change. But it hasn't happened yet. And a big reason is because there's just so many different kinds of fighters, and they're out there for different reasons. And not all of them are out there because they want the best for every other fighter. You know, some of them are out there because they have very selfish agendas, whatever it may be. They don't care about anybody else but themselves. Hate to say it, or maybe themselves, their families, or friends. You know what I mean? They don't care about the rest of the fighters. It's just how it is. So, you know, as far as a fighters union go, I really don't know if I think that's the answer. I think it would be effective if you can make one happen, but I don't know if you really could, just because of the mindset of most of these fighters out there today. It'd have to take a real unique individual, and I think it'd even be beyond that. You know, I don't know if that's an attainable goal with the landscape the way it is. What I do think would be something that is attainable is it'd be much easier to get the fans, I think, all on board, because they're easier to rally together, you know, than all these individual superstars. You know, it's much easier to get together a bunch of fans, you know what I mean, that are much more like-minded than the fighters. So I think that's where changes need to happen. Is I think it needs to start with the fans, and it needs to start with getting the fans all on board, because they can really make the differences. Quit going to the events, boycotting the pay-per-views, you know, lots of things like that to make to help institute a type of system that makes the rules are fair for everyone. Not just John Jones, who can go take picograms and fucking get jacked and yoked as much as he wants now because he's got picograms in his system for the rest of his life. Fuck this shit, this bullshit. He's giving these guys a free pass. He's, you know, bullshit, man. And and the character of these guys too. But another thing in MMA, how it needs to change the character of the fighters. You know, it needs to be it's one thing attacking someone's fighting skills, okay? And these big guys like John Jones, I can't attack his fighting skills, his fighting prowess. I wish I could. I wish I could, but I can't. He's a good fighter. He's too good of a fighter. I can't say anything about his fighting skills. What I can do is say he's got bad character. His fucking character, he's a shitty person. You say what you want, he's a shitty fucking person. And, you know, even I spent some time over at Jackson Winklejohn gym there too. And, you know, Greg Jackson, I don't have a whole lot of good things to say about him as well either. I spent almost 2 months in his camp. He didn't say one fucking word to me. It makes you pay for that. Well, when I was there, you had to pay for the mitt time that you got with guys. If you wanted to do mitts with guys, you paid for it. You know what I mean? And plus they're taking at that time, I think it was, I have to remember, 15%, I think, is what they took out of the purse to train there. If you train there and a corner came with you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, on top of that, there's other things in that gym too that are, you know, there's, I heard lots of stories training there for 2 months. I can't verify. There's nothing that I can say. I can sit here and verify and tell you that I have proof or show you that I have proof. I can't do that. Okay. I can just tell you what I've heard and what I've, you know, what I've seen. And, you know, the character at the gym there, it's questionable. It's questionable. Not so much the fighters, some of them certainly, but in particular, like I said, with Coach Jackson, I just, you know, there's some weird behavior at that gym.
Yeah, that kind of leads me into my next question. So is there a specific fight or opponent upcoming that you have in mind?
Fuck, I don't even know if I'm going to fight anymore at this point, to be honest. It's just getting one of those things where, I mean, my manager, he's been trying to find me some shows and things like that, but it's we get something scheduled and then it falls through or it's, you know, or they want me to fight at 155 or, you know, whatever the case may be. And it's just, it's getting to be one of those things where I just, if I was in a promotion, if I was signed by a promotion, I could easily answer that question for you. I'd call someone in the promotion, but I ain't signed with any promotion. So I, you know what I mean? For me, I can't sit here. I can just talk shit, you know, and be like, oh yeah, I'll fight this guy. But, you know, it's nothing that I can make happen at this moment right now. So, I mean, shit, to be honest, if there's any promotion I'd like to be in right now, it would probably be ONE FC. It would be the promotion I'd like to be with right now. So anybody, any 170 pounder in the ONE FC, division would be one of the guys I'd like to fight.
There you have it. How is being a UFC fighter different than what you had thought before becoming one?
Oh, wow. This is a good question, too. I, for some reason, was under the assumption that once you got into the UFC that you done come up and made it. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, shit. You know, you're a professional athlete. You're taken care of. You know what I mean? I was like, when my manager told me the contract that UFC was giving me, I was like, that's kind of fucked, you know? And, yeah, so it was just like,
oh, we lost you.
Can you hear me?
There you go.
Yeah. Can you hear me all right, James?
Yep, we got you.
Okay. Yeah, it was a huge, huge letdown for me. Just because, like I said, what I thought was going to happen is I thought I was getting a $100,000 contract for a year. You know, that's like, I don't know why. I think it was from the Ultimate Fighter. I think the Ultimate Fighter put that in my head because I think that's what those guys were getting at the time when I was in the Ultimate Fighter. It was a six-figure contract with the UFC. And so I just assumed that was like, oh, what everyone gets when they get in the UFC. And no, that's not how it works. And, it's wild, man, because as far as the training and the sacrifices and the dedication and – you know, what you have to put your family and your loved ones through and the sacrifices you have to make, especially when once you've actually got in the top 10 to top 15, I mean, now you're making some actual money, but it's still the guys that are making money that the NFL, the NBA, the MLB, the women's, the WNBA. Okay. We're not even making close to that type of money that chicks sitting on the bench are making. You know, and you can't sit here and tell me that the WNBA is making more money than the UFC. I won't fucking believe it, especially when their roster is you know, how many people are on a basketball team? Like 30, 20, 30, I don't know, 40. I don't even know what the rosters are per team, you know, and how many teams are there? Like 50 or something like that?
Like 30 and about 12 to 14 players per team.
Okay, well, that's little roster, a little bit closer to what the UFC has, but still, the revenues that they're making are, you know, it's ridiculous. It's fucking ridiculous.
So, if you weren't a professional fighter, what would you be?
Well, I am a realtor, so that is what I would be also is a realtor. I love real estate, especially in South Florida. It's been great for me. It's a job that lets me do what I want to. I mean, to a point, it's a job that lets me do what I want to do, and lets me be able to train and still be able to make a supplemental income so that I can, you know, still hopefully find a fight or something like that. So, but other than that, you know, I definitely like to be. I definitely like to open my own gym at one point, and that'll be certainly after I'm done competing, though. I won't get into any of that stuff while I'm competing. So,
now you have a lot of new and exciting projects coming up. Tell us more about that.
Well, I mean, basically right now, the biggest thing for me that I got going on is I just, you know, I'm on the Twitter come up right now, big time. Like I said, I'm averaging, you know, 300, 400, some days 500, 600 followers, you know, on my Twitter. And it was all from a Fight Night follow train, actually, that got me about 400 followers, 500 followers. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. The first day that I really, really got into Twitter, like really started working my Twitter, I think I gained 1,400 followers in one day. And then, I mean, yeah. And then from there, I'm at just over 8,000 now. And about 3 weeks ago, I was at 700, you know, so it's going good. That's my biggest project that I'm working on right now. I also have a sponsorship, deal with, Logan Garments Apparel, which is a clothing brand out of, which is a clothing company out of the UK. And, they're doing some great things for their sponsored athlete, not just athletes, but because they do a lot of different type of stuff, you know, any type of action sport or anything like that. So yeah, all, basically you could say athletes. Some of them are entertainers that they're sponsoring as well too, not just athletes, but they do a great job of promoting them, you know, helping build their social media presence, you know, providing benefits and actual. Paying you for putting out videos and things like that. So, which helps your social media presence as well. So I'm really excited to be working with them. I'm going to break that officially, you know, on Twitter and social media here very soon. I just need to get a few more things together before I actually break it out on social media. But, you know, I've already announced it on my Facebook and things like that. So it's not like a secret or anything, but that's, you know, that's one of the things that I'm really, excited to get going full swing. And then of course, you know, like I said, some stuff on my Twitter, but that stuff, I like to play that stuff close to the chest and not give out too many, not let on too much what I have planned there, because, Twitter's a large, broad platform. And, you know, not everyone, regardless of how they may, you know, come off on Twitter, is always out there to be your friend. And that's why, you know, I'm going to play a lot of that stuff close to the vest and keep that, keep those cards close to the chest.
Now, do you feel that the media demands kind of interfere with your training? And if so, how do you balance those two out?
I mean, you know, once you're in the UFC at a certain level, I would say it, you know, certainly interferes with your schedule. I mean, which would in turn automatically means it interferes with your training. For me, it does, because when I'm training, I'm very scheduled and routined. I get up at this time, I go to bed at that time, I do this then, I eat at this time, I do this at that time. So when I have to, you know, it's different. I, you know, because even when I was in the UFC, I wasn't doing media days and things like that. I was just, you know, entry level guy. But once you get to that point where you're doing press conferences and things like that, you know, then I would see it being much more of an interference to your training. And unfortunately, now it's to the point where it has become your job. That's your job that you got to do, is you got to go out there, you got to promote, you got to, you know, you got to go to media day, you got to do all fucking hoopla, jump through the hoops for the promoters and things like that, you know, which is good. I mean, it's good and it's bad because it's, you know, it takes away from your training, but it's good because it does. It gives you exposure and all those things. And what's that mean for fighter? Money. It turns into money. You know, the more exposure you got, the bigger name, the bigger draw you are, the more seats you sell, the more tickets you sell, the more money you're going to make. You know, the more people that you got on your Twitter, the more money you're going to make. That's just how it is.
And Leo, you know, you've been a fantastic guest. You're a positive guy. You know, I talk to you daily. I want to thank you again for coming on. Please let the people know where they can reach you on social media.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You can find me at Leo Lion MMA. That's my Twitter account. Get on there. I keep it pretty real. I am cleaning my image up just a little bit because, like I said, I had to do a bunch of, you know, stupid stunts to get my Twitter moving here. But now that it's moving in the right direction, you know, people really actually do like to see you do good stuff too and be a nice person. They do, but you have to put it out there to the right way to them, and you can't just be boring and bland. It's got to be marketed and branded properly, and you know, that's what I'm doing. That's where I'm heading in that direction. But yeah, you can find me at Leo Lion MMA. That's my Twitter handle. And also I'm on Instagram, which is, you know, much less active on Instagram, but I'm getting more so active, mostly because I don't have verification on Twitter. I don't have verification on Instagram. I am verified on Twitter, so it makes the platform much more powerful for me. But yeah, my Instagram is King Kuntz, at King Kuntz, KINGKUNTZ. And that would be my Instagram.
And now that means you guys have no excuse not to find him.
That's right. That's right.
Leo, thanks again for coming on. You can find me at JPsAllDay1990 on Twitter or James C. Turner Jr. on Facebook. Thanks again, man. Everybody, tune in next week.
Thanks.
Nothing but positive vibes all day. Grinding, trying to make a better way. Better listen to what the songs say. Truth be told, you better slow your roll. I've been on the same road before. You know I'm the chosen one. I spit flows from the brain. Young G1.